Today is Sunday, June 20th, 2021. This is part 17 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Hey, good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
Doing great, Tom. Doing great. How about you?
Very good. Thank you for asking. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, of course.
Thank you so much. When we put a comma in this oral history and concluded part 16, you had brought us up to 2003. Can you carry on with that? What did you do in 2003?
Yeah, for sure. So in the spring of 2003, just to recap, you know, Art and Bruce Grubbs and I had done an extended trip in the Nanquip and Quaggan Valleys. Our objective had been actually to go from Nanquip, following the high route that goes up over the Redwall Passes, just below the rim of the Walhalla Plateau, all the way south around to essentially Brahma Temple area, and then we were going to get back up onto the plateau and walk back north to Point Imperial, and then down to our car at Saddle Mountain. So it was a huge trip, and as these things sometimes go, we decided to change it in mid trip. And basically, you know, you're not feeling up to snuff, or the water sources don't pan out. For whatever reason, you have to make a change. And so we made a big change on that trip. And Bruce left us early to spend time in the Nanquip and Quaggan Valleys. And then Art and I basically turned around and canceled the end of the high traverse at Char Creek Valley. And then we worked downstream and then back along the parallel to the river. But we got a lot of climbing done that time, quite a number of summits. So despite the fact that the change happened, we had to modify our plan, you know, it still worked out very positively in the end, mm-hmm. for exploring new territory and doing new summits, etc. So, yeah, and that was the spring. So in the fall of 2003, Art and I were very keen to try our circumnavigation of Powell Plateau again.
Okay.
Now, in 1997, we had gone around Powell, the three of us, Art and Bruce Grubbs and myself, at the river level. And that was a really splendid trip. There was just fabulous hiking along the river, plenty of route finding because, you know, we were looking for new routes to get through the Tapetes down to the river for water connections, etc. And that just all came together perfectly, and it was a long 10-day trip, but we had a great time. But Art and I in particular were really fascinated with the Esplanade level of Powell. And so I think it was 2001, the three of us had also tried to do a circumnavigation of Powell at the Esplanade, and we came down to Dutton Point, dropped off the plateau there down to the Esplanade, but we could only get as far south as Wheeler Point before we ran out of water. And so we turned around there. Well, Art and I were able to bag Explorer's Monument on that trip.
Right.
But we turned around there, went back up Dutton, and spent some time on the plateau. So that was our first attempt at getting around Powell. And then a couple of years later in 2001, so the first attempt may have been 98. I'd have to go back and look through the notes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But in 2001, Art and I tried to go down the west side of Powell Plateau, and we talked about that a few weeks ago. But
right.
We only got about as far south as 128 mile before the water ran out again. And so we were kind of out of luck, right? So you have to change your plans. And at that time, on that trip, we went back north, worked our way along the Esplanade all the way over to the Tapetes Terrace and Steamboat Mountain area, and had a great time exploring the terraces up there on that part of north of Powell. So, Yeah, it was two attempts to get around Powell at the Esplanade, and both of them had failed, in a sense. You know, we hadn't been able to meet our objective.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, Tom, you know, ever since I was a youngster in high school and I put this Grand Canyon and vicinity map up on my wall, right, and started looking at the topography of the Grand Canyon and imagining all these places, you know, that Harvey Butchert was going to, and I always looked at Powell Plateau, and I always looked in particular at these terraces off the southwest end of Powell, like Tobar and Alarcon Terrace, and I thought to myself, those have got to be about the most remote places to get to in the Grand Canyon, you know?
Right.
You know, you got to get all the way out to Swamp Point, which is manageable, of course. But then you got to get up onto Powell Plateau, you got to walk down Powell Plateau, you got to find way off Powell Plateau, and then you got to walk on the Esplanade in very dicey terrain if you don't have water, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's a real critical consideration. And then you can get out onto these terraces. And so it was always a very, strong and intense objective for me, kind of almost magical, mystical, right, to think of what it's like out there. And so that kind of was a driving force for 30 years. And, of course, then Art and Bruce and I were very interested in working out the logistics of getting to these places and actually doing the circumnavigation of Powell. So, this was kind of like we really wanted to get this done, you know, and not so much because we wanted to get around Powell at the Esplanade. I mean, that was an objective, of course, but the main thing was we wanted to explore all these terraces, you know, and just find out what the topography was like, what little hidden gems might be out there, you know, in the way of creeks or mezcal pits, or who knows, there might be some sort of cliff dwellings. We had no idea, you know.
Right.
There was very, very little written about that, because if you looked at Harvey Butchert's map, he never went out there.
Interesting.
And so that's a big gap, a big blank area on most people's Grand Canyon hiking maps. So
yes.
Yeah, it was a very, very inspiring and motivating factor in planning these trips. And so Art and I decided in April of April 2003, yeah.
Okay.
So our last trip was, must have been 2002, Tom, that Nankwe trip. I'm not going to worry about that now.
Yeah.
But this is in April of 2003. We were planning this trip around Powell. And the idea with this time was to tackle it from the west side and see how far we could get. And this would be similar to what we had done 2 years prior. And so, anyways, I flew down to Phoenix and did some shopping, and then Art came up and picked me up in the evening, and we went and spent the night in Flagstaff.
Hey, Jim.
Bruce.
I'm going to jump in here and say, yes, it was 2002 that you guys did that NACO kind of high routes trip. So this is 2003, and were you guys watching, because you knew water was a problem. Did you guys watch the monsoons that summer to kind of get a sense of what the weather was doing out there, whether you'd have water or not?
Definitely, we followed that for sure. And in this particular case, it wasn't the monsoon so much that we were depending on, because we were going to go in April. And
in the fall. I'm sorry.
Certainly Art, you know, he would follow the weather incessantly, and he consulted a lot with Bruce. Bruce does a lot of flying, and he's very knowledgeable about meteorology and weather, and he follows the weather, you know, as an expert, and he provides advice to Art and myself.
Cool.
on what to expect in the way of conditions, et cetera.
And so, this would have been snowpack up on the Powell Plateau as well. You could look at that.
Well, that's right.
And,
yeah, so
and
the winter storms, you know, the accumulation of snow up there,
mm-hmm.
and how frequent the storms had been during the course of the winter, as well as, you know, close to hike time.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You want to know if there was a storm that went through, ideally, if a storm went through 3 or 4 days before your hike, that's the best, right?
You bet.
if it really dumped a lot.
Yeah.
So anyways, we, We definitely we're keeping. Or I should say Art. Art and Bruce were keeping on top of that. Since I was the fellow from Canada, you know,
right.
I kind of you know utilized these two guys, or I relied on them to work out the logistics of weather and identify the prime times to go, right? And of course, you know, we knew very well when we started this particular hike in April, early April, that it might be a bust, right? We might get turned around, and maybe that's why nobody had any lines of hikes out on Powell Plateau, because it's damn impossible to get out there. There's no water at all, right?
Right.
We didn't know. So it was always in the back of our mind, but this trip we headed up to we stayed at Bruce and Dewart's in Flagstaff, and then the next morning got an early start and went over to Fredonia, and we talked to the people in the ranger station there about the road access.
Okay.
Because keep in mind, this is early season, right? So the road into the North Rim is still closed.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and we needed to get into...
So you can't drive the Swamp Point Road close to the Powell Plateau. You're going to have to get a different route in there.
Exactly. And so what we decided to do was to go in from Big Saddle.
Okay.
And go down Crazy Jug and then follow the Esplanade over to Saddle Canyon, and then up to the cabin, and then get onto Powell that way, right?
Okay.
And I had done that in that Esplanade Traverse in that big through hike. I shouldn't say through hike, but the big hike I did from Kanab to Phantom Ranch,
right,
in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I had been up there on the Esplanade, so I knew that route would go. I mean, it's straightforward walking, but I was really concerned because when I did that in the 70s, that was extremely rough with Manzanita. And, you know, I told Art, if we're going to do this, it could be that it's going to take us quite a bit of time, right, to get from Big Saddle over to Mauve Saddle.
Right.
Because of the brush. And so we knew that that was a possibility.
Okay.
And so we kind of factored that into our time. We thought it might take, for instance, we thought it might take 2 days to get from Big Saddle to Swamp Point, 2 full days, right? When I say Swamp Point, I mean Mauve Saddle. So that's what we kind of had planned on for timing. And then also the same amount of time going back, right? So that was essentially an extra 4 days built into this trip plan that we wouldn't have had to include in the trip if we were if we were starting from Swamp Point. So we talked to the rangers, and they said, well, you guys need to take what they called the what did they call it? It was like the winter road, I guess.
Right.
They called it, so it basically runs at a lower elevation parallel to the paved highway.
Correct.
But about 30 miles to the west, and so it's not a paved road. It's a fairly rugged in places dirt road. But the one thing we were thinking about as we drove down that dirt road was that it was very rocky, and that would be beneficial if it snowed on us, right? On the,
yes,
when we were trying to get out.
And it's also 1,000 or 2,000 feet lower.
It's
considerably lower than the paved road that goes to the North Rim Lodge.
Exactly. And so that's why, you know, that's why it's a winter route.
Got
because
it.
It's quite often open and accessible,
yeah,
during the winter when the snow is just way too deep on top of the rim itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so even though it's April, early April, it's still residual winter, particularly on the rim. And there was snow, no doubt. There was snow that when we drove along that winter road, there were places where there were patches of snow, right? And when we got to Big Saddle, we parked Art's Subaru there, and there was snow there in patches, not everywhere, but it, you know, it was a fine start to the trip because the weather was gorgeous, and we left. So we parked the car I remember we parked it really close to where the road diverges to go over to Monument Point to the west.
Okay.
And we follow the fence line to the rim, and then there's a beautiful trail there that starts down. I think we talked about this on one of the earlier hikes. I think it's called the Hatch Trail, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's an old stock trail that goes down from Big Saddle down to the Esplanade in Crazy Jug Canyon and then disappears. And so I think that basically the cowboys, you know, back when they were running cattle up on the Esplanade, would use this trail to bring cows down for pasturage there on the Esplanade,
right,
and then bring them back up when it was time to take them to the slaughterhouse. So that's my assessment anyways. I mean, who else would have built this trail?
That's right.
That just went down to the Esplanade. And, of course, there's so much evidence of cowboys on the Esplanade that, you know they were all over the place. And this
drops you down north of Steamboat Mountain. I'm trying to figure out how that geography works.
Yeah. We're quite a far ways north of Steamboat, because you've got from Wasaddle, you have Saddle Canyon going down about 5 miles north, 4 or 5 miles to the north.
Okay.
And then it turns to the west and becomes to Pete's Creek.
Right.
Okay. And Steamboat Mountain is about at that juncture, but up above.
Right.
And from that juncture where a saddle turns to the north and turns into Pete's Creek, Crazy Jug Canyon goes directly north.
Right.
Up to Big Saddle. And that's another, I guess it's maybe like 3 miles. 3 miles down from Wasaddle and then 3 miles up to Big Saddle through Crazy Jug. So, you know, from Big Saddle to Moab Saddle is, as the crow flies, it's probably about, I guess, seven or eight miles. But, of course, you can't just go straight. You have to go in and out the side canyon. So, you know, we were expecting a fairly extensive walk. But fortunately, I guess there had been a fire through there. Ooh. And the manzanita wasn't nearly as rough as I had remembered it being and as I had told Art. And so we were able to make pretty good time across the Esplanade there. And we found water in many of the side canyons, right?
Okay.
So I remember when we crossed Kemp Canyon, which is about halfway or 40% of the way, I guess, from Big Saddle to Moab Saddle, we found a lot of water in there, and I remember filling up, like four liters worth to get us to Moab Saddle. And I also found this beautiful, it's the first time I've ever found these little tiny arrowheads that were used for birds.
Oh, wow.
And, I just call them a bird point, right? Mm-hmm. And they're about 1.5 centimeters in length. And just, you know, exquisitely crafted. I mean,
yes.
they're like bigger arrowheads, but very, very tiny, you know, with notches at the base where they would attach them to the shaft of the arrow. Anyway, it's just a really neat find because I'd never come across any arrowheads like that were that fine before.
Cool.
And very cool. And so we made it to the Esplanade Terrace between Timp and Stena. So that's about halfway that day. And we camped there. And I remember it was a very, very similar spot to where I had camped in 74, I think, whatever. I think that was the year that I went through there. It might have been 73. And I had the picture to prove it, right?
Mm.
So we basically camped within 25 feet on the edge of the Esplanade, overlooking to Pete's Creek, and down below us, we could see way off in the distance the Thunder River fall coming out of the Red Wall, and just a spectacular view down to Pete's Creek. So a nice campsite there, and then the next day we got up, and again the walking was just so smooth. You know, you're on these esplanade terraces, and it's essentially flat walking on a sidewalk.
Right.
You know, of course, you come to the side canyons, and like Stena Canyon, and there's willows and oaks, and you know, a lot of thrashing about and crashing around to get across these areas. But then, you know, the walking would resume, and it would be just lovely. Mm-hmm. And so we made really fast time, and it took us only about 4 hours to get up to Moab Saddle at the cabin there.
Wow.
So, you know, we stopped there for lunch, and I remember we filled up at the spring, which is about 200 meters, I guess, to the east,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a quarter mile. I'm not quite sure, but I remember the flow was very, very weak.
Ooh.
And
huh.
And we were kind of apprehensive about that because we were thinking, you know, we really need the water here on this trip. And if the flow was that weak in this spring, because Art and I had both had been there before independently and found a much stronger flow over several visits. And we were concerned that this boded poorly for our success, you know, finding water later in the trip. But nonetheless, you know, we filled up and with full capacity too at this point.
So was that 4 liters? Or
no,
or
I think
more?
At that time we were carrying about 2.5 gallons.
Oh wow!
Yeah, a lot of water, right? And you know, I have to say, Tom, this is an aside here. It's relevant, but you know, as you know, when you're backpacking in the Grand Canyon and you're not rock climbing, the heaviest thing you're carrying is water.
Right.
In many, many cases, because you know that's you need it to live. There's no way around that. And if you're doing a 2-day stretch or a 3-day stretch and it's reasonably warm, you need a lot of it. And so, you know, we carry the capacity, and hopefully you don't have to fill up to full capacity all the time. You do when you have concerns about whether, you know, you're going to be finding water in the next couple of days. So that's – and one thing that I have learned from 25 years of hiking with Art Christensen is focus on keeping things light, you know,
yeah.
Because you need to get that pack down as light as possible so that you can pile on the water when you need to. And so, you know, that's been a mantra of Art's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I've met him, and you know, he's really a master engineer, and he designs his own equipment and constructs it, and he built these beautiful packs, essentially a very lightweight sack of Cordura or some robust fabric, you know, with shoulder straps. Everything is just stripped down of weight, and he gave me one of these packs, you know, around this time, and it was just like I christened it the Art Light Pack, right?
Oh,
so,
cool!
I told him he should market these because there's a definite niche market for this. People want this kind of ultralight gear that's rugged and dependable.
That's right.
And
that's right.
So Art's so unassuming. He would never market that stuff, but he mm-hmm. certainly gave me a wonderful pack, which I've cherished over the years.
Cool.
So yeah, that was an aside, but we definitely loaded up with the water because we didn't know exactly where we'd be finding it next. And so that afternoon we headed up on the plateau, and I remember I was really out of it. You know, it was a heavy load. And of course I'd just flown down from Vancouver, so I wasn't really acclimated
to sea level, right?
Yeah, from sea level up to 7,000 feet, so it was a challenge, but we managed to climb, and I remember doing a lot of resting on this hike. Yeah, and so we walked south and along the east side of the plateau, and then eventually started to head to the southwest and heading for a break on the west side, which is basically at the head of what's called Blacktail Valley. So Blacktail Canyon, which you're familiar with, goes, you know, it's a side canyon that goes all the way down to the river
right.
at around 120 mile or something like that.
Yeah,
Yeah. And but Blacktail, the drainage itself, all actually goes up and crosses a lot of Powell Plateau. And so we headed out to the west side of the plateau, looking for a break that we knew about. And it took us some casting about because there's a lot of a confusing number of parallel drainages there that you have to cross over. But eventually we got to the rim, and it turns out we were only a couple hundred yards off of where we needed to be. Wow. So that was pretty pleasing. And and at this particular break, there's a really nice deer trail that gets you down through the Kaibab and Torweep, and it's a very pleasant descent, no question. There's some thrashing here and there through brush, but in fairly short order, we were down on the Esplanade, and it was it was a great place to be, and it seemed like in fairly short order, 2 days we'd gotten from Big Saddle. Well, actually, in 2 days, we'd gotten from Flagstaff out onto the Esplanade on Powell, right? And much faster than we had expected. And the bonus was that there was water in this side drainage where we camped. So, we're thinking, wow, this is great because we really needed this water. Now, of course, that meant we had carried excess water over from the spring.
Right.
From Wild Saddle, but you don't worry about those kinds of things. You're just happy to find the water where you are.
That's right.
So yeah, a really nice, exciting camp there, and things were looking good. So we had a great night's sleep there, and then the next day, headed to the west.
Okay.
And again, we're finding water in all the drainages. It was just super.
Wow.
Things were looking really good. So we got out to Thompson Point. On Powell Plateau, below that, on the Esplanade. And we dropped our packs there because we wanted to hike out Spectre.
Okay.
Terrace. And so we did that walk, and you and I were talking about Spectre a few weeks ago, and this was a totally different view because here we were to the east of Spectre Chasm,
right,
looking over the river at it, you know. And when we talked a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that ever since I'd read about Harvey trying to get around into Spectre and see if there was a red wall route there, I was fascinated with the idea myself. And so when we were out on the terrace here, we could get a really good view at the supai,
right,
in Spectre. And not so much the red wall because that was a little bit hidden, but certainly the supai was there, and I'm an eternal optimist with these things, and so I figured, that's a pretty good cliff, but there could be some hidden chimneys, right?
Right.
And the hidden chimneys can always be the key that you need, right?
That's
and
right.
So I thought, well, we've got to get there. We've got to come up from below, and assuming we can get through the red wall. Of course, I didn't know at that time that you guys had found this red wall route.
Right.
And it was just... just fuel for the fire, future hikes. There's just always new initiatives that you want to pursue and follow up on. So, we headed, after that, spending a little bit of time out there, probably eating our lunch or whatever, we headed back to our packs. And I think this is where Art found a cowbell.
Oh,
lying
wow.
on the Esplanade.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and there's just this, I know why, because everywhere you go out here at this time of year, there was just thigh-high grass. It was just beautiful, luxuriant, thigh-high green grass. And if cattle had been there, and we definitely know they were,
right,
in some numbers, they would have loved it, right? It would have been a spectacular place. So anyways, we came back from Spectre, our hike out there, and then put the backpacks back on, and we came around the next point, and we could look down into 128 Mile Creek, and again, we found more water. We could see more water pockets. And so we actually worked our way down through some cliffs in the upper part of the supai there, and were able to fill up at these water pockets with nice red buds around. You get the sense that some of these features are fairly permanent, right? Because with the vegetation that grows around them, I suspect that they're probably ephemeral. But just really luxuriant and a beautiful, you know, little setting. And so we filled up again, and we're starting to feel pretty good now, because this is where we turned around 2 years prior.
Okay.
Because we had gotten this far and we found no water. And so we, at that time, we knew we didn't have enough to get around to the east side of Powell at the Dutton Point.
Right.
And so we had to turn around and go north. But now, this year, in 2003, we did find water in 128. And so, you know, we knew we had enough to get quite a bit farther along. In fact, at that point, I think we knew we could probably make it, right? Because with that much water in our packs, we could certainly get to Dutton Point with through hiking. So, you know, that was a really big relief, because, you know, we knew at that point that we were going to get this hike in some form or other. So it was kind of a celebratory moment, right? But we continued on, and you know, as you go along the Esplanade here, you're getting the plateau dips to the southwest, so the elevation is constantly dropping, and the vegetation becomes more sparse, and so the sandstone slabs are more exposed, and you know, walking becomes even easier as you go to the southwest around Powell Plateau, and as I said earlier today, in many places it's just like walking on a sidewalk. I can't I can't get over, or I can't emphasize enough how easy the walking is, you know, and people have this idea that hiking in the Grand Canyon is really hostile, and
don't tell
and
them.
It is in some places.
Yeah,
you know, there's no
right.
discounting
that's right.
that.
That's right.
Yeah. So, but it's one of the big appeals of the Esplanade, and I think that's been a common theme in our discussions.
That's right.
Know? So, so anyways, we continued on, and the next point is Beale Point, and there's of course Garces Terrace there. And this is another spectacular one, because you get great views down onto the river from both the points out at the end of Garces Terrace.
Mm.
And so we you know, spent a few hours hiking out Garces and taking in those views. And I'm trying to remember where we camped that night. Yeah, we continued on to, that's right, we continued on around 127 Mile and to the neck of Alarcon Terrace. So this is the one that I was talking about earlier, which to me was one of the most romantic, in my mind, places to be in the Grand Canyon. So, you know, we were going to be going out onto Alarcon, and of course we're finding water all the way. And so it was, at this point we knew that we were going to be able to, you know, very likely be able to do all the side hikes that we had envisioned.
Nice.
And so we camped there, and this would be on the neck of Alarcon there. So Alarcon's a really long terrace that trends to the southwest, and you have to drop down a little bit and then climb back up to get actually onto the there's a little neck between the main part of the Esplanade just below Powell, and then the top of Alarcon. So it's a minor climb, but
what,
we camped right at that neck.
What
and
are
then,
the drainages either side of that terrace?
Sure. The one to the north is 127 mile.
Okay.
And the one to the south is 122 mile.
Okay.
Okay, so that may orient you
yes,
there.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah. And so we camped there, and the next day was going to be we allocated the whole day if we wanted to Alarcon, and you know, we're both pretty excited about this, and the walking again is fantastic. You get down there, there's tremendous views. It's such a remote feeling to be in this position,
yes.
looking down on Fossil Rapids. You
right.
know, we could see. We saw river parties camped on either side of the river in the vicinity of Fossil.
Oh.
I assume it was below the rapids, but and then we walked, continued along the Esplanade Rim to the south, and we could look down on Forster Rapids,
okay,
and into Forster Canyon, and a more spectacular view, you know. And then continued kind of at the same level back into 122 mile, heading for our packs. And when we got into 122 mile, I thought, well, look, we're in the bed of the wash here. I mean, our objective is to walk up the wash and we rejoin our pack, mm-hmm, right, where we dropped our packs and then continue. But I said, why don't we walk down to the Red Wall Rim in 127? And I think Art decided to just sit in the shade while I went down there. But yeah, it was a fun walk down to the lip. You know, there was a drop off in the Red Wall that was, of course, insurmountable from above. And but it was good to go down and see it. And again, potholes, water in potholes,
oh, wow,
in the Red Wall. So we were finding water in just spades this trip. It was
great.
Quite the contrast to the previous year's efforts.
And I was thinking from the river looking up, you have a very clear horizon, which is the top of the Red Wall. And occasionally looking a little further upstream or downstream, you can see the higher terraces, the Esplanade above. And so it must have been quite a view when you got out to the Red Wall lip there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it certainly was. Although it was more spectacular in Blacktail, and I'll talk about that in a minute, right? But, you know, it's certainly fun. There was no expectation that we'd be able to connect the route, or
right,
I would be able to
right,
connect the route. No expectation, but you just want to see what it's like,
yeah,
right? And to look over the edges of these drops. And in this particular case, in 122 mile, there's a fairly good distance between the highest point we could reach from a below, which we did on our 97 trip. We came up from below and went as far as we could, and then as far downstream as I could get from above in 2003 was still about a quarter mile short of where I'd come up from below, right? So it wasn't a situation where you could look straight down to
right,
where you had been previously, but it was still pretty neat to get so close to connecting the two traverses, right? So yeah, we packed up. I mean, we hiked back up to our camp and we camped in the same spot again because this had been a fairly long day. And so the next day was intended to explore Tobar Terrace, which
okay,
is just a short distance around, three quarters of a mile, I guess, of hiking the Esplanade till you get to the neck of Tobar Terrace. And we did the same thing here, just walked out as far as we could on the terrace, heading for the southwest point. And I remember there was a cairn out there.
Oh,
and
wow.
So somebody had been there before us, you know. And, of course, people had been there before us, Tom.
Right.
I mean, we found
right,
mezcal pits everywhere on this trip. Let's keep that in context.
Yes.
You know, the Aboriginals were all over this countryside, and I can't blame them. It's so beautiful out there. But certainly it's unusual to find cairns in some of these places, you know, because it's only us modern explorers who have you know, the hubris and think that we're the first ones to ever set foot in these places
that's
build
right,
these cairns,
that's
right?
Right? That's right.
Yeah. So, but it's still kind of entertaining, right? To find one there, but again, more spectacular views and hoodoos. I mean, that's another aspect of these terraces. There's hoodoos and sandstone pillars and big boulders everywhere and you know, water pockets here and there. When you're out on these terraces, Tobar and Alarcon, it's fairly dry there. You know, we were finding water in the upper parts of the drainages where we crossed, you know, just below just below Powell Plateau itself, you know, at the higher part of the drainage is where you cross, and we would find flowing water. But there were very few full water pockets out on these terraces themselves. But, you know, there was plenty of water for us up higher on the esplanade, so that's what counted. And so at this point, you know, we were really close to tasting victory here, because we were only a day short of where, you know, we had ended our trip, the first trip that came down the east side of Powell Plateau. And so we camped again in, where was that camp? Yeah, okay, so after we did Tobar, then we walked the Esplanade over to 120 Mile Creek, which is also called Blacktail Canyon.
Okay.
And this is the one where the two of us walked down to the Red Wall Lip, and quite honestly, you can scramble around there, and it's got to be careful because it's a little exposed. But we could actually get into a point where we could look over the lip and look straight down to where we had come up in 97.
Oh, fun.
Our high point below.
Right, base of the Red Wall, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like 600 feet vertical.
Wow.
You know, virtually a free rappel if you had a rope long enough to handle it. So, yeah, it was pretty spectacular. And again, a neat place to get to. And when you think back, oh yeah, I remember, you know, a few years ago when we did that hike from below, and we hiked up as far as we could, and we got into that amphitheater, and we looked straight up over our head, you know, and there was that lip way, way up above, and here we were, right
yeah.
at that lip, looking
yeah.
down,
yeah.
you know, it's kind of an inspiring position to be in. So, so continuing on, I mean, this, you know, this may sound repetitive, but there was yet one more terrace, and Devaca Terrace, which is a
yes.
small one. But it certainly it had its appeal, and we hiked out to the end of that and walked around the edge of it, you know, and came back on a different route. So we basically did them all, and it was quite the trip. And
all the while, you're getting closer to Explorer's Monument. That area there, which you had already been out to.
That's right. We had come down in, was it 97 or 98? We had come down the east side of Powell from Dutton Point and turned around just below Wheeler Point because we had run out of water. We were hoping to find water there, and there was none. And at that time, Bruce waited while Art and I spent most of a day going out to Explorer's Monument.
Right.
And then we came back, and then the three of us retreated back towards Dutton Point on Powell. And so we were getting close to that. And we knew from that point, you know, we knew there was a seep below Dutton. So we knew there was water there.
Okay.
And all we had to do was negotiate that stretch of esplanade that goes along the east side of Powell. It's about 4 miles, I guess, or 3 miles. And we would be at the seep. So it was, you know, we knew we had this hike finished. I mean, it was not going to be a challenge, a problem. And so it was fairly relaxed mental state. And I remember at this point, I decided I wanted to see if I could find, it looked to me like there was a route up Wheeler Point, right? And I mean, I didn't know of any route. I know that Ken Walters and Jim Ullman had done a rappel route off of Powell, north of Wheeler Point, like a mile or two.
Okay.
They had come down and rappelled through the Coconino. So, and they had gotten down onto this part of the Esplanade via that rappel. But I thought from below that maybe there might be a route going through the Coconino on Wheeler Point itself. So, you know, Art stayed below, and I scrambled up there, and it was getting late in the day, and I remember it kind of got a little exposed, and I realized that I just couldn't go any farther, so I'm going to have to down climb. And I was in a place where I couldn't you know, I was carrying a walking stick, right? These custom walking sticks that Art makes from dowels.
Okay.
And they got a nice little handle on them. I mean, they're perfect, right? They're,
oh, wow.
And very extremely lightweight, but very durable.
Hmm.
They last trip after trip after trip, although they wear down and get shorter and shorter.
Right.
Anyways, I had my walking stick because it's just force of habit. And so I said, well, I'm going to have to down climb here. I can't be fiddling with this. So I tossed the walking stick down to a ledge, and it slid off the ledge and went into this chimney, and I could hear it rattling down through the Coconino for, you know, it seemed like forever. And I thought, oh, my God. You know, you ever see Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
the movie?
Yeah.
You know, when when one of the I can't remember which of the hobbits it is, drops that bucket down into the well in the mines of Moria. You know, that bucket just rattles down that well, and then of course all the orcs come to life, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, I didn't have that concern, but I was kind of, you know, disenchanted to lose my walking stick. So, but anyways, no big deal, and I scrambled back down and met up with Art, and from there was a little from there it was just a short little, you know, jaunt over to where we had been on our earlier trip, and so we started back along that stretch, and we didn't go out Marcus Terrace again to Explorer's Monument because we'd already done that.
Right.
But I wanna tell you, because this hiking is so unusual out here around Powell Plateau that, you know, Art and I, maybe Art doesn't, but I constantly refer to this trip that Art and I took as the 80-mile day hike, because it was, you know, most of the time we were carrying a backpack was relatively short compared to all the hiking we did.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
You know, and so we would drop our pack, and then we'd spend all day hiking out Alarcon Terrace and exploring out there, you know. And we'd hike another three-quarters of a mile, drop our packs, and go explore Tobar Terrace. And and we really put the miles on, but the total, you know, the total distance was something like 80 miles. And yet most of the sensation that we have is that it was all day hiking.
Yeah.
So,
very cool.
You know, very, very cool, place to be. Very, very cool. I'm so glad I went in there, you know, that the two of us, were able to pull that off, and, you know, through careful watching about the weather and then planning, our route and everything, we managed to pull off a fantastic hike, you know, and it wasn't over. Because that day, after doing Devaca, we made it about halfway up along Powell Plateau to Waltenburg,
okay,
the head of Waltenburg, and that, you know, just east of the head of Waltenburg is where the break goes up through the Torweep and Coconino and Kaibab to get up onto the plateau in the vicinity of Dutton Point. And so we got close to Waltenburg. Actually, now that I think about it, we actually got into Waltenburg. That's right. And we had a very hard time finding a campsite there, because by this point you've come up in elevation as you're walking up the strata, which are dipping to the southwest behind us. We're having to ascend gradually in elevation. And so by the time you get to the head of Waltenburg Canyon, you're in the Pinyon Juniper. And so there's less open slabs to camp on, and the topography is kind of more compressed in there.
Okay.
We had a hard time finding a campsite, and we finally found a little open space in the shale, right? And it was looking very threatening at this point. And I actually had a satellite phone on this trip.
Yeah.
It was one of the earlier trips that I had a satellite phone, and I'd been using it to call Renee periodically and touch base with her. And then we also had gotten a couple of weather forecasts from Bruce, who was in Flagstaff.
Okay.
And at this point, I think the day before, he had told us that we should expect a storm to come through on this day or this night. So we were a little apprehensive about that. And we put up Art's tent, the Art Light tent.
Okay.
And in the middle of the night, it started to rain. So we had to quickly get out and put the fly on it, the tarp, to stay dry. And then the rain turned to snow. And it, through the night, you know, we're just sitting there knocking the walls of the tent to keep the snow from accumulating.
Right.
And it snowed like a half a foot.
Whoa.
Yeah, on the Esplanade. It was really intense. And it would, in the morning, it started to get light. And we could see the trees and whatnot. So we knew we had to get out of there. And at some point, you just got to bite the bullet and go for it, right? So, you know, we packed up our gear in one of these lulls and got everything into our packs. And then it started really coming down again, really snowing heavy. And I just remembered that Art took off and led the whole route up to the rim of Powell Plateau, you know, in this whiteout with very poor visibility.
Wow.
And it was just a masterful lead, you know. And he just found the way perfectly.
Wow.
And so we got on the top, and it's still coming down heavy.
And now I would think there'd be a little more than 6 inches of snow up there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was basically up to mid-calf, right?
Wow.
And keep in mind, we're just wearing tennis shoes.
Ooh.
You know, that's our hiking, lightweight hiking shoes, and Art wears tennis shoes, and some kind. I think they're New Balance or something, but I had some very lightweight hiking shoes, so we're soaked, right? Our feet are soaked,
right.
And so you just have to keep going and
right.
push through, which we did. You know, we hiked up to the north end of the plateau and then went down to the cabin in the saddle, right? And it's still snowing on and off, and so on the highest part of the plateau is probably up to just below our knees, right?
Uh-huh.
That much snow, and very unusual for hiking in the Grand Canyon in April.
Yeah.
But we went down to the canyon, and I remember it being really cold. You know, I'm sorry, we went down to the cabin
right.
in Moab Saddle, and I remember being really cold. And so we just said, let's spend the night in the cabin,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually melted snow for water because we didn't want to go over to the spring,
yeah,
you know,
and
fight through the snow.
Easy to do. It's right out the door.
Exactly. So we did that, and we actually put up the tent inside the cabin because we figured that it would retain more heat, right?
Well, that's a
good
idea.
How cold it was. It
wow.
was damn chilly.
And was the roof patent enough to keep drips out of the inside of the cabin there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not sure when the Park Service did the renovations of that cabin, but by this time,
great.
It was, you know, we were quite comfortable in there. I mean, it was
great.
Very bitter cold, but we were well protected from.
Well, as you did to keep your feet from any kind of frostbite sort of thing, so that's a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole idea was to get in our bags and get
mm-hmm.
dried out
right.
and warmed up,
exactly.
right? Because we were pretty wet from that traverse, and then the bitter cold. So
no,
we had
idea.
To do something.
Yeah.
So yeah, it worked out fine. And, you know, we had an enjoyable night in the cabin, even though it was cold. You know, and I'm not sure Teddy Roosevelt ever actually overnighted in that cabin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did he?
I don't know. I don't know either.
I don't know for certain, but, you know, we certainly told stories and tall tales about what it would have been like being up there with Teddy Roosevelt, you know, and the Rough Riders and, you know, just at that being there in that era, right, when Roosevelt visited the canyon. So, but anyways, that was our big storm, and Bruce had called it correctly. And we spent the night in the cabin, and the next day we looked out the window, and it was brilliant sunshine.
Oh,
it was
wow.
gorgeous, but it was probably, we didn't have a thermometer, but I'm guessing it was probably, you know, 10 degrees or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And because all our shoes which we had left outside because they were so wet,
right.
were frozen, you know, completely frozen. We had to put those on our feet. I remember that being quite the experience, you know. But we were in the sun, right? And
right.
Not initially because, you know, it's right at the cabin. It's all forested.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go down Saddle Canyon about a mile before we
right.
could get to the Esplanade, which would take us back north to our car. And, you know, the Saddle Canyon was pretty densely overgrown
yep.
with vegetation. I mean, there's deer trails and whatnot, so it's not – it's quite pleasant walking. But it was all in the shade.
It's a jungle,
is my point.
But it's you can kind of walk down the drainage. There's a little bit of opening there, but still it's vegetated and snowy for you guys.
And it was very snowy. But as we went to the north, we're dropping in elevation,
right?
And eventually we got to essentially Esplanade level.
Mm-hmm.
Where the sandstones of the Supai group start coming out,
right.
being exposed. And here, these slabs were in the sun. And so, you know, talk about relief, because the sun actually had, in some places, had melted enough of the snow off that there was bare sandstone sitting there. And we, you know, we could just kind of relax at that point and warm up and just, you know, have a great appreciation for what we'd been through in the previous week.
Kind of perfect timing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, to have that sun come out, you know, that morning and just illuminate everything. I have a picture of Art, you know, and he is in the snow at the cabin, and he's got blue pants on and a blue jacket. He would hike with a down vest and a couple of long sleeve shirts, and then he had a wind and rain jacket,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That would go over the down vest, and that's pulled up over his head, and he's totally blue, and he's got his hiking stick there with his green backpack, and the entire landscape around him is this blue snowscape, right?
Wow.
It's quite bizarre looking, and again, a very unusual hiking experience in Grand Canyon, you know, to be in the snow like that. So at that point, yeah, we said, well, look, we've got 2 days to get ourselves back to Big Saddle, you know, and we know that when we came through here, it only took us about a day and a half, and so we kind of agreed, let's just try and go for it, you
okay.
know, in one day.
Hmm.
And so we actually did that. We just kept, you know, booking across these Esplanade terraces, back the way we had come a week before, 8 days before, and found our way back, you know, to the Hatch Trail, leading up to Big Saddle. So it was a perfect ending because it just all came together, just in fine style.
But I'm thinking, wait a minute, back to the Hatch Saddle, that puts you back up in elevation again, and was there snow at the car?
Yes, there was snow at the car, and but it wasn't, you know, that bad in that
okay.
particular area. I mean, we're at that point, let's see, I think you're still lower than the elevation of Powell.
Okay.
So, you know, like maybe 500 or even 1,000 feet lower than Powell. I'm not quite sure what the difference is.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't
substantial. Yeah, that's substantial.
There wasn't the same amount of snow, and of course we had a whole day of that. By that time, there'd been a whole day of sunshine.
Right.
That had taken its toll on the snow accumulation as well. So, I mean, I'm sure I don't remember any problems with getting out in the car. You know, getting back out on the road. But I do remember that. You know, we had to work at it, and it was
okay.
slow going and slippery in places, and you know, and as we went north, I do recall that the snow kind of diminished, and so maybe the epicenter of the storm had been on the southern part of the Kaibab
okay.
Plateau.
All right.
You know,
yeah,
I don't know, but but we didn't have any problems getting out in the car.
Fortunately.
Cool. Wow. Yeah, and of course the Art Subaru is all wheel drive, so that
wow.
helps too. So.
What a wonderful adventure.
Yeah, it really was. It's one of the high points, I think, of my hiking career in the Grand Canyon, you know, and again, this 80-mile day hike concept, right?
Mm.
And it just worked out perfectly, you know, with the water logistics, everything came together perfectly. And then to top it off, we had a winter storm, and which, you know, really packed a punch and really chilled down on us. But we just took it all in stride.
Yeah.
And it was just a perfect trip. So
very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of went on about that one, I think, because as I say, it was a kind of a quintessential Grand Canyon hike for me, and you know, one of the highlights. And so
yeah.
I really kind of I get inspired and motivated when I
no
when
worries.
I start talking
I mean,
about
that's
it.
That's a place very few people go, as you say. It's hard to get to, and water is a real key there to get
yeah,
out there when
I,
there is water.
And I hope that, you know, someday somebody will listen to these lectures or these transcriptions, you know, and we'll say, yeah, maybe we can go out there and do that, you know, and check it out and see what's to be seen, and they'll know that what they have to do, you know.
Yeah.
They'll know the basics that you have to be aware of, you know, the water, et cetera, et cetera. And of course you have to know your route, right? But and you have to be able to adapt, right? And like virtually everybody who would look at this route would say, well, we have to come in from Swamp Point, right?
Right.
We got to start the hike
right.
at Swamp Point. And, you know, that would be the logical way to start. But to maximize on your water, you want to be there in the spring, I would say,
yep.
as we were. And so that dictates that you have to come in from an alternate point.
Right. The North River is closed.
You can't
drive in Swamp Point,
yeah,
even if there's
sure.
no snow on the road, because that area is closed.
That's right.
So
yeah.
you have to come in a little further to the west, which is what you did. And that's a beautiful, beautiful way of going about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Well, maybe with that, this is a good place to put another comma in this oral history series. Does that
okay.
make sense? All right.
Sure.
Well, we'll wrap this up then. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Jim Haggart. Today is Sunday. It's July 11th, 2021. My name is Tom Martin. And Jim, thank you so very, very much.
Thanks so much for the opportunity, Tom. I really enjoy, you know, going over this stuff with you.
I do too. Hang on.